Tonight's shiur is a very, very fascinating story that took place approximately 200 years ago, possibly a little bit more, and it deals with two very great tzaddikim. Before we begin the story, we want to make it very clear that both people that we're going to speak about are definitely tzaddikim, talmidei chachamim. The first, whom we're going to refer to as the Shepetovka, because that was the name of the city that he came from. His name was Harav Yaakov Shamshon Mishepetovka. He was a student of one of the greatest students of the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh. The second one is known throughout the world as the Noida B'Yehuda, and he is one of the poskim in Shulchan Aruch. He's one of the leading rabbis of the Shulchan Aruch, who's very, very much respected. And this story deals with a meeting that they had under an unusual circumstance, and the Torah that passed between them, and what was accomplished by this meeting. Before we begin, we have to introduce two terms a little bit to understand in what context we're referring to them. The first is the term chasidim or chasid, and the second is the term mitnaged, as it's known in the world. The term chasidim, as we're using it to refer to here, the time that we're talking about is the 1700s and 1800s, shortly after the time that the Baal Shem Tov was revealed in the world. And he professed, he emphasized, he began to underline a certain thing that seemed to be forgotten by many of the leading religious people at that time. At that time, we had many of the rabbis of the Shulchan Aruch who had big yeshivot, many, many hundreds of students that were learning by them. And they were learning a lot of Torah, a lot of Gemara, a lot of Shulchan Aruch. But when it came to application, when it came to lema'aseh, to actual performing mitzvot, we find that these people were, most of them, were sitting and studying Torah day and night, which in itself, in many ways, is considered the greatest mitzvah, but yet it's not the only mitzvah. And as we're going to learn in the story that we're going to speak about tonight, one without the other, the whole greatness of the study of Torah is only when it leads to ma'aseh, to mitzvot. When a person from the Torah zocheh to come to serve Hashem through each one of the 613 mitzvot and all their branches and extensions, that's when the Torah is really serving its purpose. Whereas at that point in time, it seemed that many people were beginning to separate the two, to consider the study of Torah as the entire religion. And when it came to actual performance of mitzvot, or when it came to helping a Jew, people started to become very insensitive towards that. Whereas the Baal Shem Tov underlined very much the concept of chasidim was not ones who are not learned. On the contrary, as we're going to see from tonight's story, those who were true chasidim were very, very learned, and in many, many ways far superior than the others. But yet, there was a different direction, a different emphasis. The underlying factor was the doing, the performance of mitzvot, using the knowledge of Torah, the fact that the study of Torah was step one. Not that that became an end, that this is the completion of my religiousness. I know how to learn, or I learn. The purpose of the learning is, that's phase one. First you're taught what to do, then you go out and actually do it. And if a person spends his whole time learning what to do and never actually gets around to doing it, obviously he's missing the point to a tremendous extent. Now we begin the actual story of the confrontation. The Baal Shem Tov, whose formal name is Rabbi Yisrael Baal Shem Tov, that's how he was known throughout the world. The Baal Shem Tov had a student who was known as Harav Yaakov Yosef Mipulna, Rav Yaakov Yosef from the city of Pulna, who wrote a sefer called, the sefer that he's most famous for, is the sefer called Toledot Yaakov Yosef. This is a very deep perush on the entire Torah with many, many chidushim, mostly based on the teachings of his rabbi, the Baal Shem Tov. As soon as he came out, as soon as this sefer was revealed and began to be printed and publicized, many of the mitnagdim at that time, who had an automatic negative attitude towards chasidim and certainly any Torah that was being produced, that was being printed by the chasidim, they immediately assumed that it was negative, it was useless, and they went to many, many large extents to show their disdain for this. For example, this specific Talmid Chacham, this leader of Jewry, of world Jewry, V'inod Abi Yehuda, when he heard that this sefer had come out, he issued a decree among his students that this sefer, if a person sees this sefer, it's worthy of being burned. It should be burned. It's not to be studied, because this is the Torah of the Hasidim, which we don't accept. We don't accept them as being an authentic source for Torah. The Toledot Yaakov Yosef, shortly after his sefer began to be publicized, he passed away. It's the story begins by saying that in the place where he was in heaven, he was very disturbed at this item, at the fact that one of the leading rabbis who was alive in the world, actually a rabbi, one of the rabbis of Shulchan Aruch, would apply such an edict to his sefer. Number one, this was very insulting. This was very derogatory to one who was so great at tzaddik. And number two, this was very unwarranted. This was very incorrect. So he came to one of his students. One of his close students was this Shepetavka, this Rav Yaakov Shamshon Mishepetavka. We're going to refer to him as the Shepetavka. That's the name of the city from which he came from, but that's the nickname that he's usually known by. This rabbi came to his student in a dream. The Toldot came to his student, the Shepetavka, in a dream, and he told him that I want you to do me a favor. Being a student of mine, I want you to stand up for my kavod, for the kavod of this sefer that I came out with. I want you to rectify the situation. This leading rabbi, this Talmid Chacham, the Inod Abi Yehuda, actually said that this sefer should be burnt and destroyed, and he's acting in a very, very disrespectful manner towards this. I want you to undertake a mission of convincing him that he's wrong, that he's very wrong. This rabbi, the Shepetavka, had tremendous respect and love for his rabbi, and he immediately undertook this project with zeal, with fervor. And he set a plan in his mind of how to go about this. The first step of his plan was to dress up as a very poor man, and he put a sack on his shoulders, and he headed for the city of Prague. This was the city where the Inod Abi Yehuda, this leading rabbi of the Mitnagdim, this was the city where he was the leader of the city, and he had a very unusual yeshiva. His close circle of students consisted of a group of 60 students. Each one of them was responsible for one gemara of Shas. Each one of them was fully acquainted with one complete gemara by heart. So that if he ever wasn't sure about where a certain sentence was in the Gemara, if he knew which Gemara it was in, he would simply point to that student. This student was proficient in Berachot, this one in Zivachim, this one in Berachot. Each one was a master of one Gemara by heart completely, and naturally that wasn't the only Gemara they knew. They knew all the others pretty well too, but each one specialized in one Gemara. The Shepetavka set out for the city of Prague. He came to the city, and he immediately went to the home of the Inod Abi Yehuda, to the home of this rabbi. He knocked on the door, he came inside, and he approached this. In this rabbi's home was where he had this close circle of students who studied together on a daily basis. The Shepetavka came in. He right away walked up to where the rabbi, the leader of the class, this Inod Abi Yehuda, was sitting. And the rabbi asked him, what are you here for? The Shepetavka told him, I'm a poor man. I'm here because I'm a poor man. This rabbi immediately answered him very curtly, that I can see, that I don't need you to tell me. What are you here for? What's your purpose here? The Shepetavka told him, there are three things that I'd like to request of you. The first is food. The second is lodging, a place to stay. And the third is that you should please undertake to collect funds for me in the city here, in your city. The Inod Abi Yehuda looked up at this person, at this poor man, this person who was dressed as a poor man, sort of with a disdainful type of feeling, and he told him, that's not really my line of work, number one. And you're asking for quite a few things. In other words, you want this, you have a whole list of demands that you want. The Shepetavka immediately fired back, don't you have any respect for the one who's standing beside me? Vinoda Biyuda, who was sitting in front of a sefer, he looked up again. At last glance, all he remembered seeing was just this poor man standing in front of him. He looked up again to see if there was anybody else, if anyone else had magically appeared next to him. He didn't see anybody, so he said, "Who's standing next to you?" He told him, David HaMelech says in Tehillim, "Ki ya'amod limin evyon." There's a pasuk that says that Hashem, the Shekhinah, stands on the right side of a poor person. The Zohar HaKadosh stresses many, many times that those people that are closest to the Shekhinah are the poor people. Because they have a broken heart by nature, they're the ones who are able to develop the closest relationship with the Shekhinah, ones who have this quality of a lev nishbar, a broken heart. The Noda Behuda said, "Fine." And he told him, "Again, you're still asking for quite a few things." So this rabbi, the Shepetovka, replied, "It seems to me from the way you're talking that you don't even understand the meaning of a simple pasuk in the Torah, a simple pasuk in the Chumash, and the interpretation of Rashi HaKadosh on that pasuk. There's a pasuk in the Torah which says, Ushemaretem va'asitem, the Jews should guard the Torah and perform all the mitzvot of the Torah, va'asitem, guard them and perform them, kihi chochmatchem uvinatchem le'enei ha'amim, because this is your wisdom and your knowledge before all the goyim of the world. This is what you carry with you as a banner, as a flag in front of all the goyim." This is what the pasuk says, and Rashi HaKadosh explains, Ushmartem zu mishnah. The word ushmartem refers to the study of Mishnah, the Gemara. Va'asitem, and do them. In other words, ushmartem means watch the mitzvot. How do you watch the mitzvot? By studying the Mishnah, knowing what Hashem wants you to do. That's how you perform this mitzvah of ushmartem. Va'asitem, the pasuk says va'asitem, and do the mitzvot, perform the mitzvot. Rashi HaKadosh says, kemashma'o. It means just what it says. That's what the Rashi HaKadosh says. Kemashma'o means exactly what it says. That's what it means. The Shepetovka said, why did Rashi HaKadosh have to bother saying that word, kemashma'o? What does that mean? What is Rashi HaKadosh coming to add? If Rashi HaKadosh had nothing to say in clarifying this word vasitem, then we know that if it says vasitem, it means vasitem. If it says do the mitzvot, it means do the mitzvot. Why does Rashi HaKadosh have to tell me that it means exactly what it says? What could I have thought? The Shepetovka began to explain. We find the Gemara tells us that when Hashem originally presented the Torah to Bnei Israel, before presenting it to the Jews, he first presented it to many other nations of the Goyim. First, he went to the nation of Esav Harasha, and he asked them, "I have this fantastic treasure. Are you interested?" They asked him, "Could you give us a sample?" A jeweler comes to sell to market jewelry. He shows off a sample briefcase. "Can you give us a sample of what's in the Torah?" Hashem said, "Sure." One of the mitzvot of the Torah is lo tirtzach, thou shalt not kill, forbidden to kill. They said, "That's not up our alley, because about us it's written, va'al charabecha tichyeh. One of our ancestors, Esav Harasha, was told to live by the sword. We live by the sword. Murder is part of our life, our way of life. So obviously the Torah is not for us." Next, Hashem went to the Yishmaelim, to the Arabs. Hashem offered them the Torah. They asked, "Can you give us a sample of what's written there?" Hashem said, "Sure, it's written, lo tin'af, no adultery. Adultery is forbidden." They said, "Impossible. It's part of our way of life. This is our ancestry is based on adultery and everything." And so on and so forth. Hashem went to all the nations of the Goyim, offered it to them. They all rejected it. The Shepetovka said, the question is, if your approach to religion is the correct one, that the true service of Hashem is the study of Torah, these nations shouldn't have had any problem. They could have been 99% religious. Study the Torah? Great. Study about thou shalt not kill and give tzedakah and everything comes to doing it. That's not that important. The fact that they all refused and Hashem literally took the Torah away from them and gave it to the Jews, was based on one premise only, and that was the performance of the mitzvah. The study of Torah? No, Esav HaRasha didn't say, I don't want to study Torah. He said, I can't comply with one mitzvah. Hashem said, forget it. Then you don't get anything. Yishmael, I can't comply with one mitzvah. You get nothing. If the whole religion is the study of Torah, this isn't what should have happened. And this is the true meaning in this pasuk. This is what Rashi HaKadosh wants to emphasize. Ushmartem, you should study the Torah, va'asitem, and perform its mitzvot. Why? Ki hi chochmatchem ubinatchem la'inei hamim. What distinguishes, what differentiates the Jews from all the other nations? It's not the study of Torah. It's the va'asitem, kemashma'o. Simple performing the mitzvah, that's what makes the difference. That's what the goyim were not ready to accept. That's why they rejected the Torah, and that's why they have no part in the Torah. So therefore, I don't see why you're making such a big deal. I come in here, and I ask you to help me out with tzedakah, and you tell me you're busy learning, and learning is the most important mitzvah, that's what you're doing, then you obviously don't understand the meaning of this pasuk in the Torah. This is what the Shepetavka said to this Noda Bihuda. He said to him, I see that you have some interesting things to say, but the fact is that I am a Rosh Yeshiva. I sit and study a yeshiva of students, study with a yeshiva of students here. I have a special committee in the city, a Bet Din of three rabbis. They're the ones who take up all charity cases that come to the neighborhood. I send the person to them, they take care of it. So how about if you go see them and they'll take care of you? Shepetavka said fine, and he left. He went to visit these rabbis, and an hour or two later, he returned to this rabbi, to the Noda Bihuda. Came knocking on the door, they let him in. Right away, he went up front to where this Rosh Yeshiva was sitting, and he told him, I have a problem. He told him, these judges that you sent me to, I see that all three of them are liars. The Noda Bihuda looked up at him in shock. These were the three leading rabbis in the city at that time. He said, I've never had any problem. Nobody has ever questioned their honesty before. You say this so blatantly, they're liars? He said, sure, it's very, very obvious. And there's no way in the world for me to be able to judge them lekaf zechut. There's no way for me to say anything in their behalf, in their favor. Why? He said, it's a simple pasuk in the Torah. There's a pasuk that says, Rodef tzedaka v'chesed, a person who chases after charity and good deeds and kindness, shows kindness to other people, yimtza chayim tzedaka v'chavod, will be zoche to life, to wealth, and to honor, all three things. He said, I went to these three judges. One of them told me he's very old. I asked them to come around collecting with me. He said, look at me, I'm frail, I'm not in a position to go out and collecting. We'll make an appeal, we'll send out letters to the community, maybe they'll give, well, they'll send in some donations, we'll have some money to give you. The pasuk says that one who performs mitzvot of tzedakah, yimtza chayim, he'll find life, he'll find strength. If this rabbi says he's weak, he's obviously not one who deals in the mitzvah of tzedakah. A second rabbi told me that the people in the city aren't that rich, they can't really afford to give much. Again, he's lying, because the pasuk says that rodef tzedakah, that one who strives to perform the mitzvah of tzedakah, yimtza tzedakah, he will find chayim tzedakah v'chavod. It says that if he tries, he'll get money, he'll be able to raise donations. So if this rabbi said that he can't seem to raise much money, he's obviously lying. Either he's lying or he's negligent in performing his duty. If this is the committee that raises charity in your city, they can't be too good. The third rabbi told me that it's beneath his kavod. He can't really go around collecting with me because he generally deals with she'elot. People bring questions to him about kasher, about a pot and meat and milk, those kind of things. He's not usually in the habit of going around raising money with somebody. Here again, he's lying because the pasuk says, Rodef tzedakah yimtza chavod. The Torah testifies that one who goes about raising charity will be zochet to kavod, to honor. This is an honor. This isn't something that makes a person low or cheap. If he goes around raising money for tzedakah, this is the biggest kavod. So these three rabbis that you sent me to, who turned me away with all of these excuses, they're obviously not that great. They're obviously not that good in performing their duties. The Noda Behuda asked the Shepetavka, now I have a question for you. You seem to be quoting Pesukim, you seem to be very learned in Torah, I have a question for you. The Gemara says that whenever a rabbi comes to a community for the first time, he's visiting a community for the first time, he's required by law to notify the people of the community that he is a rabbi. He must tell them that he's a rabbi so they know to act towards him with respect. Because if not, if they're not aware that he's a rabbi, they could act in a disrespectful manner, chas v'shalom, and they could be committing a big sin. They could get punished for this. So the law is that he's required to notify them about this. And interestingly, the Zohar HaKadosh says that we find this hinted to in a pasuk. There's a pasuk that says, Yehalelcha zar velo picha. That usually the rule is that a person should never praise himself. A person should never speak highly about himself. Yehalelcha zar, let a stranger praise you, velo picha, not your own mouth. You should never be the one speaking about your own greatness, your own goodness, your own qualities. The Zohar HaKadosh says we have an interesting play on words in this sentence if you put the comma in a different place. Yehalelcha zar. The general rule is that you should not be the one speaking about your own qualities, because other people, let other people do that type of talking for you. If you do it yourself, it's a display of arrogance and it could be taken the wrong way, etc. Velo, what if there's nobody available who knows about you? What if there's nobody around? You're visiting a new neighborhood where nobody knows you, and if you don't talk about yourself, they're not going to know that you're a rabbi, they're not going to show you the proper respect, and chas v'shalom, they're going to be committing a sin. The Zohar HaKadosh says, velo, if there is no stranger available to speak about you, then picha, then your own mouth is permitted. You're permitted to notify the people, to speak to them words of Torah, and to notify them the fact that you are a rabbi, so they know how to act towards you. So the Noda Behuda asked this Shepetavka, I don't understand. If you're so knowledgeable, you came to me, you presented yourself like a poor man, like an ignorant poor man, you should have told us right off the bat that you're a Talmid Chacham. We would have acted differently towards you. We would have acted nicer. We would have made more of an effort to raise money for you or to do something special on your behalf. The Shepetavka told him angrily, and note, this was all said with a slight sarcasm. He was teasing him and leading him on in this. He told him that that Gemara is only written when you're dealing with regular civilized people, whom even if an Am Haaretz comes into their city, and he's a poor man and he needs food or he needs clothing, they won't just turn him away empty-handed. They'll help him, they'll try to do something for him. About such people, the Torah says that if you're a Talmid Chacham, you must notify them that you're a Talmid Chacham, so they know to treat you extra special. Not special, but extra special. But he says, I come to a city like this, where an Am Haaretz, if you thought that I was just a simple nothing, you treat me like nothing. About such a city, this Gemara is not written. I'm not required to notify you that I'm a Talmid Chacham, because it probably wouldn't have made any difference. You probably wouldn't have treated me any better. Because the fact remains that how is it that you people take this so lightly? The Torah says that the mitzvah of hachnasat orchim, the mitzvah of taking a guest into your home and feeding him and clothing him and providing him with whatever he needs, is even a greater mitzvah than receiving the Shekhinah, than speaking to Hashem himself. And this doesn't seem to impress you. The Noda Behuda said to the Shepetavka, how do we know this? How do we know this fact that taking a guest into your home is considered a bigger mitzvah than even speaking to Hashem, receiving Hashem as a guest? The Shepetavka replied, we learn this from Avraham Avinu. The Torah tells us that there was once an incident where Avraham Avinu was speaking to Hashem, and three guests appeared, and he said to Hashem, I'm sorry, you'll have to wait. I see these guests coming, I must deal with them first, and then I'll come back to Hashem. So we see clearly that Avraham Avinu showed greater respect for guests than he did for Hashem. The Inod Abihuda asked him, well, how did Avraham Avinu know to do that? How did Avraham Avinu know that Hashem would want him to show greater respect to the guests than to Hashem? The Shepetavka replied, it was very obvious to Avraham Avinu, because the Pasuk tells us that that day, the day on which this incident took place, was the third day after the Brit Milah of Avraham Avinu. And that was the day when he was the most, when he felt the pain of the Brit Milah the most, because when a person is sick, generally the third day of the illness is when the illness is most severe, it's strongest, it builds to a climax, it starts off small and it expands, the pain builds to a climax on the third day and then it begins to decline. So on that day, Hashem, the Torah tells us that Hashem had pity on Avraham Avinu, and Hashem knew that Avraham Avinu wouldn't stop looking for guests. Any chance he had to take a guest into his home, he would search and he would work for it and everything, even as sick as he was. So the Gemara tells us that Hashem made a miracle. Hashem removed the covering from the sun, and Hashem made the heat of the sun much, much more powerful than it is normally, so that no people would be found outside walking in the streets, so that there would be nobody whom Avraham Avinu could grab to welcome as a guest into his home. Then Hashem went to speak to Avraham Avinu. Hashem spoke to him, and during the speaking, the sun was blazing down so hot. The Shepetavka said, if Hashem thought that speaking to Hashem was a bigger mitzvah than taking guests into your house, then Hashem didn't have to make this trick with the sun or anything. If Avraham Avinu was speaking to Hashem, naturally, he would not be doing anything else. He wouldn't be taking, if a guest would show up, he would tell the guest, get lost, I'm involved in something much more important now. I have Hashem as my guest. The fact that Hashem had to change the actual nature and had to perform a miracle to take the casing off the sun and to allow the sun to shine so brightly that no guest would be found, no person would be found walking the streets, that proved that were there a guest around, the bigger mitzvah would have been to take the guest into his house, even more important than speaking to Hashem. This is what the Shepetavka replied. And he said to the Noda Bihuda, and if you don't understand this, and if you don't accept this, then you're not even one whom people should stand up for. Usually the law is that when a rabbi comes into a room, there's a mitzvah to stand up for him as a sign of respect. He said that if you're one who doesn't show the proper respect to this mitzvah of hachnasat orchim, then there's no need even to stand up for you. This rabbi replied, I can see from the way you're talking that you are from the kat hachasidim, you are from the group of people who call themselves chasidim, and you know that I generally don't look favorably at them. And again, the Shepetavka replied, that's all the more reason why I say that you do not deserve any respect. If somebody were to ask me, according to Hebrew law, whether they're required to stand up for you or not, the answer is no. And he said, I could prove it to you from a statement in the Gemara. The Gemara says, in Pirkei Avot, that one of the rabbis of the Gemara said that if a person is good-natured in a manner where people like him, people look favorably at him. The Gemara uses the term Ruach HaBriot Nochehimenu, that people look favorably at him, they like him, they like his good deeds, then Hashem likes him also. And if not, if a person is the type of person where people don't see any good deeds coming from him, and therefore they don't like him, the Mishnah says, then Hashem doesn't like him either. So he said, these people who closet themselves in a room and they just study Torah and people don't see any good deeds whatsoever coming from them, if that's the case, then obviously Hashem is not too satisfied with them. The Inod Abihuda said, still, I don't get the point. Why are you saying specifically that you would tell a person not to stand up for me? Why specifically that item? He told him, wait a second, let me finish what I was saying. I just mentioned one statement in the Gemara. There's more to it. This concept of Hashem only liking a person if the person is well liked by people, this concept is actually a debate. In Pirkei Avot, the Mishnah uses the exact wording that we just mentioned, that kol sheruach habriot nocheh imenu, any person who is well liked by people, ruach hamakom nocheh imenu. Any person who is not well liked by people, Hashem doesn't like him, that's the wording in Pirkei Avot. There is a Yerushalmi where the Yerushalmi says just the opposite, just the exact opposite of this Gemara. The Yerushalmi says that any person who behaves in a manner where Hashem likes what he's doing, then automatically such a person is going to be well-liked by people. And any person who behaves in a manner that Hashem doesn't like what he's doing, in other words, he doesn't obey the Torah, he doesn't live by the way of the Torah, then automatically people won't like him either. He won't find favor in the eyes of people either. Along this line, the Shepetavka continued to explain, now about this debate in the Gemara, there is a story in the Gemara which seems to shed light on this debate as to which is the final opinion. Which do we favor? Which do we say is more true? If a person is liked by people, then Hashem will like him? Or if a person is liked by Hashem, then people will like him? The Gemara in Gittin tells us that one day there were two rabbis sitting, Rav Huna and Rav Chisda were sitting, and a man walked by in front of them. The man's name was Geniva. He walked by in front of these two rabbis. One of these rabbis asked the other, what do we do? Are we supposed to stand up for this person? Because we know that he's a big Talmid Chacham. The Gemara uses the word Bar Uriyan. He's very learned. He's very knowledgeable in Torah. Or should we not stand up for him? Because we know that he's a Baal Machloket. We know that one of the leading rabbis at that time, his name was Mar Ukva. And the Gemara tells us in the beginning of Masechta Gittin that this Mar Ukva had a lot of trouble from people in his community, that they were fighting with him, they were causing him all kinds of problems, they were making machloket against him. One of the leaders of the controversy was this man, this Talmid Chacham called Geniva. So these two rabbis were sitting, this rabbi, Geniva, walked in front of them, and they were discussing, should we stand up for him because he is a big Talmid Chacham, or should we not stand up for him because he's a Baal Machloket? The Gemara says, while they were talking, this man, Geniva, overheard some words of Torah, and he quickly walked over to them, and he asked them, I hear you speaking words of Torah, can you tell me what topic you are discussing? They said to him, yes. We were talking about the ruchot, we were talking about the winds, about the four winds. So the Gemara says that he told them, this person, Geniva, told them a chidush, an interesting item about the four winds, about the manner that the winds operate, the north wind, the south wind, an interesting item about this. The Shepetavka asked, we have a problem here. These rabbis seem to have lied. This man, Geniva, came over to them and he asked them, what were you talking about? If they didn't want to tell him, they should have said, we were discussing an item in halacha. We were discussing a Hebrew law. Why did they say they were discussing the winds? What does this mean? The answer is that these two rabbis, their debate of whether to stand up for this person or not, is actually contingent on this debate between the Pirkei Avot and the Yerushalmi. Because the wording in the Gemara is, kol sheruach habriot nocheh imenu, spirit, a person who is well-liked by people, that's called ruach habriot. Ruach means spirit, that the spirits of people are with him. Ruach also means winds. They were debating whether to stand up for him or not. Why? Because on one hand, Hashem likes what he's doing. He's a Talmid Chacham. He's one who learns a lot. But on the other hand, he's not well-liked by people because he's a Baal Machloket. He's a troublemaker. He's a person who goes around stirring up trouble, fights against people. So when they said that they were discussing Ruchot, what they were actually discussing was this debate in the Gemara as to which takes preference. A person who's liked by Hashem, a person who learns a lot of Torah, do we stand up for such a person? Even if he's not well-liked by people, he doesn't conduct himself nicely to people, or do we favor the issue of behaving towards people, in which case this person we would not be permitted to stand up for? And by the manner in which the discussion continued in the Gemara, the Shepetavka said, we see that the Gemara favored the first opinion. The fact that it's a person who's liked by people, that's one whom Hashem likes. And therefore, this one who's a Baal Machloket, we do not stand up for him. So the Shepetavka now said to the Noda Behuda, therefore, people like yourselves who closet yourselves and study Torah only for yourself, you don't share your Torah with the people, you don't go out and help bring people close to religion, you are ones whom if I were asked whether to stand up for you or not, the answer is no, definitely not. As soon as he mentioned this item, the Noda Behuda said, I see that you're not coming looking for a donation. You're not coming here to collect money. You're looking for a fight. You're looking for trouble. Tell me what you want. What are you looking for? The Shepetavka smiled very calmly. He said, fight? I'm not looking to fight. He said, you know what my title is? I'm a problem solver. You can ask me any question you want, any problem you have, and I'll answer it. I'll solve any question, any riddle, anything that's ever troubled you in Torah and anything. Ask me and I'll give you the answer. The rabbi said, now this rabbi, the Noda Behuda, turned to his students and he said, I see that this person who appears he came dressed up like a simple poor man, he's obviously a big Talmid Chacham. He began to address his students. The Shepetavka told him that this is obviously your first question. Your first question is, how is it possible that I'm a Talmid Chacham and I'm also a poor man? Your question is, Tzadik Veralo. We have, the Gemara discusses this, the question as to how it's possible for a person to be very religious, very good, and yet he lives a life of suffering. He lives a life of poverty and difficulty. How is this conceivable? If this person is doing what Hashem wants him to be doing, why shouldn't he be living a life of Riley? Why shouldn't things be very good for him? This rabbi, the Noda Behuda, smiled and said, yeah, that's my first question. Go ahead, let's see, answer it. The Shepetavka told him, oh, that's a very simple question. No problem. He told him, the Gemara tells us in Nida, the Gemara says, Darash Rabbi Chanina Bar Papa. Rabbi Chanina Bar Papa once lectured that as soon as a child is conceived, at the moment that the droplet comes forth, this droplet goes before a certain angel in heaven called Lamed Laila, that angel. Hashem places this tipa before this angel, and this angel declares whether the human being that's going to come from this droplet, whether he's going to be rich or poor, whether he's going to be smart or dumb, and certain other items like that, that this angel declares at that point in time. The Shepetavka said, note, the angel does not declare whether this person is going to be a tzaddik or a rasha. That the angel doesn't declare, and we know for a fact that that is not dependent in any way on any angel, because the Gemara says, Hakol bidei shamayim chutz miyirat shamayim. That that's something that depends purely on the person. Each and every person has free choice, no matter how he was created, no matter what kind of neshama he has, each and every person has free choice as to whether he wants to be religious or irreligious. So now it's very simple to understand. The second the child is conceived, Hashem declares whether the child is going to be rich or poor. Now that has no relationship with whether the person is going to be a tzaddik or a rasha. So that's how it's possible for a person to be a tzaddik, to be very religious, and yet he's poor, because when this droplet was first conceived, the Malach declared that he's going to be poor. So it's not contingent in any way on how religious he is or religious he isn't. As soon as the Noda Behuda heard this interpretation, he said, I see immediately that this is not an ordinary human being whatsoever. This level of wisdom, the depth of knowledge in Torah that's being displayed here, is not that of a normal rabbi whatsoever. This is somebody that's like a Malach Elokim. However, he said to him, I still don't understand, because doesn't the Gemara say that everything depends on mazal? That everything is contingent on mazal. If a person has mazal, he's rich. If a person has mazal, he's poor. So therefore, it would seem to imply that regardless of what this angel says when the droplet is first conceived, Still, the mazal can make it that the person should be rich or poor either way. So why do you say that it's dependent only on what this angel declares the moment the person is born? Shepetovka said, that's your second question? Simple. There's a story in the Gemara that'll answer that question very easily. The Gemara tells us in Psachim that one time a king and a queen were sitting and they were debating, they were discussing. What do kings and queens discuss? Do they discuss Torah? Do they discuss computer technology? They were discussing which meat is tastier, which meat is better. Goat's meat, the meat of a goat, or the meat of a sheep, the meat that comes from sheep. Which meat is superior? They were debating this. One said that sheep's meat is definitely preferred, it's definitely better. The other one said, no, the meat of a goat is definitely higher quality, it's considered better quality. So one said to the other, well, we know the best person to ask this question to. There's one person who knows the most about these items, that's the Kohen Gadol. The Kohen Gadol, who spends most of his time with sacrifices, goats and sheep and everything, he would be the one to know best which Hashem considers as being one of the greatest quality. Is it goats or is it sheep? Now, the word in the Gemara for goats is gedi. A gad or gedi refers to goats. The word in the Gemara for sheep is imri. Imri is the Aramaic word for sheep. Imri also means to speak, to make a statement. This is what they debated. The Gemara says that they summon the Kohen Gadol, and they asked him, could you tell us, you're obviously the one, the connoisseur on these items, could you tell us which is considered superior, goat or sheep? The Kohen Gadol answered that the sheep is superior. This is the story in the Gemara. The Shepetovka said this whole Gemara seems to be ridiculous in a sense, chas v'shalom. They were discussing which meat is tastier, which meat is better. Why didn't they simply take a goat and slaughter it, and a sheep and slaughter it, and eat, taste both, and see which they like better? Or ask 100 people, do a Pepsi Coke test, and check 100 or 1,000 people, see which do you like better, and get the statistics and find out exactly which is considered better. Why, in other words, why this whole debate? What was the debate here? What was the discussion? And they needed the Kohen Gadol to answer this question. They couldn't find a deeper question to ask the Kohen Gadol. The Shepetovka said this is what they were really discussing. They were discussing, they were hinting to a discussion about this topic. The word gedi also refers to mazal. In Aramaic, this same word, there's an expression, the Gemara, gad gedud, something like that, which refers to mazal, a person's mazal in heaven. The word imri means a statement. They were discussing which is the priority, which is considered superior. The fact that we know there exists a concept in heaven of mazal, one person has a mazal that he's going to be rich, one person has a mazal that he's going to be poor. Which takes preference, the mazal or the statement of this angel? That whenever a Jewish child is about to be born, an angel actually makes a statement declaring what the child is going to be, rich or poor, exactly what the destiny of that child is going to be. This was the debate. They said, for such a question, this is really a deep question, we have to call the Tzaddik Emet, the leading Tzaddik, who is represented by the Kohen Gadol. He'll know the answer to this question because he's the one who's permitted to go into the innermost chamber of the Beit HaMikdash. He's the one who has the closest relationship with Hashem, in a sense. He's the one who will know what takes place in heaven. And when they asked him, and he said that it's the sheep that's considered the better, he was saying that the priority is still the statement. The word imri, which means sheep, also means statement. It's the statement of the malach that takes priority. So that therefore, if we see a tzaddik who's poor, it has nothing to do with his mazal, it's got nothing to do with a mazal, because ein mazal Yisrael, the Gemara says that the Jews are above mazal. Mazal is something that applies to the goyim. It means that when he was born, they declared that he should be poor. This is why he finds himself in a poor state, period. That's it. And it has nothing to do, it's no reflection whatsoever on his deeds. At this point in time, the Noda Bihuda said to him, I ask you again, tell me what you're here for. What's your purpose? Can you tell me what do you want from me? The Shepetovsky answered him, I'm here to answer your questions. My business is services. Anything, any question you have, anything you don't understand, simply ask me and I'll give you the answer. The Inod Abiyuda thought for a second and he said, fine, I got a good question for you. Could you define the word chassid? Could you explain to me a definition, a good definition for the word chassid? What does it mean? The Shepetovka thought for a second and he said, sure. A chassid means one who fixes things that need to be fixed. One who fixes things that require repair. The Inod Abiyuda looked at him. Now this Inod Abiyuda was one who himself knew the entire 60 Gemarot, the Chumash, the Navi, the Shulchan Aruch. He had studied thousands of Sifarim. These were people, this was a person who could scan, in 30 seconds, could scan thousands of pages of Torah and look for every place in the Torah where the word chassid is mentioned and see that there's no application whatsoever of this word chassid referring to fixing. So as soon as the Shepetovka said this, he laughed. He cracked up, he started laughing, and he turned to his students and he said, isn't that hysterical? That's a funny interpretation. I never heard that one. Chassid means one who fixes things. And he turned to the Shepetovka and he said to him, can you tell me what your basis is for this? Do you have a basis in the, do you have a source in the Torah from which you know this, that the definition of the word chassid means one who fixes? The Shepetovka said, sure. It's a whole discussion in the Gemara. There's a whole Gemara that speaks about this. Then Inod Abiyuda looked at all of his students, and he said to Shepetovka, I want you to know, you see these 60 students sitting here? Each one of them, you can test them. Pick any page in the Gemara. You say page 121 in Baba Batra, 13 lines down, and he'll start reading for you, no problem. Each one of them is a master. He knows at least one entire Gemara by heart, word for word. If maybe you tell us which Gemara it's in, I'll have one of them do a scan, do a check on it. We'll see if it's there. Or maybe you're using a different edition that we're using. Maybe you have a qualified, maybe the Hasidim have a different version of the Gemara. Maybe it's in your version, it's not in ours. The Shepetovka said, haha. Just to make it easy for you, it happens to be in the Gemara Berachot, the first Gemara in Shas. That's where this whole discussion is, and that's where the definition of the word chassid is. Now this Rosh Yeshiva, the Inod Abiyuda himself, it just happened to be that this was the Gemara that he himself was learning at that time. He was learning Berachot at that time. And he quickly, again, in seconds, he simply scanned the 64 or 65 pages in Berachot, going line by line in his mind, looked, he saw the word chassid mentioned in that Gemara once or twice, in no way related to fixing anything, and he said, I give up. Again, sarcastically, I give up. I challenge you. Let's see you explain this in any way. Shepetovka said, this is so simple. The Gemara says that there's a pasuk in Tehillim where David HaMelech says to Hashem, Shamra nafshi ki chassid ani. Hashem, please protect me. Why? Because I am a chassid. I am a very righteous person. So the Gemara says, what was David HaMelech referring to when he called himself chassid? What did he mean? The Gemara mentions three items. Number one, he said, Hashem, you know what I'm righteous, you know what I'm special in? You see all the other kings? They like to sleep late, they enjoy sleeping 10 hours, 15 hours, a luxurious type of sleep. By me, I never get one whole night's sleep. I always divide the night in half. The pasuk says, Chatzot laila akum lehodot lecha al mishpitei tzidkecha. David HaMelech used to wake up every single night for Chatzot and learn Torah and pray for the Bet HaMikdash. All of those things, he said, this is one of the things that would classify me as Chassid. A second item, he says, all the other kings like to keep themselves immaculate, very clean, very dainty. They don't like to touch dirty items. And by me, my days and nights are spent purifying wives to their husbands, having to check bidikot, to look at the blood, the stains on the clothing, those types of items, to purify women, David HaMelech said, my hands are wet with blood and filth. This is the wording that he used. With blood from examining chas v'shalom, children that pass away at the early age, before 30 days, to see how long the woman is tamei, different things like that. That's the second item that the Gemara says, that he said that he is a chassid. And the third item the Gemara says is that he mentioned the fact that every single thing that I do, I always check with my rabbi, Mephibosheth. I never make a move in religion without first checking with my rabbi, Mephibosheth. And then the Gemara says, by the way, his rabbi's name was not Mephibosheth. His rabbi's real name was Ishbosheth. He was called Mephibosheth. Mephibosheth was a nickname used in a respectful manner, in a nice way. This is the statement in the Gemara, that David HaMelech said to Hashem, Hashem, please protect me because I am a chassid. I am a chassid. And he gave these three reasons as to why he's a chassid. The Shepetavka turned to the Noda Behuda and he said to him, this was all David HaMelech. David HaMelech, who's such a big tzaddik and everything, this was all he could come up with for what he does. Big deal. He gets up chatzot. How many Jews do we have who are simple Jews, not big tzaddikim, and yet they get up every night for chatzot, they pray to Hashem, they study Torah? That doesn't classify you as being a super... This was David HaMelech, one of the biggest tzaddikim of all time. This was all he could say for himself, that he gets up in the middle of the night and he learns Torah, or that he dirties, he checks bidikot. Every rabbi of every city has this type of thing. Every rabbi who gets a salary of $50 or $100 or $1,000 a week is involved in these kinds of questions. A woman, whether she's tameh or not, nida, all of these questions. What was David HaMelech saying that he's so fantastic in doing this? And thirdly, he doesn't make a move in religion without asking his rabbi. The answer is, does he know what he's doing or not? If he knows what he's doing, then there would be no necessity to ask his rabbi. If he doesn't know, then what's the big deal that he asks his rabbi? Of course he has to ask his rabbi. If you don't know a halakha, you have to ask your rabbi, no matter who you are. And again, and fourthly, why does the Gemara bother, in the middle of this whole conversation, the Gemara mixes in that his rabbi's name was not Mephibosheth, it was Ishbosheth. What's going on here? What is the Gemara referring to? What's this whole discussion about? The Shepetavka said, let me teach you the Gemara. Let me explain to you what the Gemara means. We know that the Gemara tells us in another place, in Eruvin and in other places, that any Jew who says that King David, chas v'shalom, committed a sin, that Jew is missing some screws. That Jew is a little crazy, because David HaMelech is registered as one of the greatest tzaddikim. The Arizal says that out of all the different tzaddikim from the beginning of time, David HaMelech is unique in that he's one of the only neshamot that ever came to the world that never had to come back b'gilgul. He never had to return b'gilgul, implying that he had nothing to fix. Once he was on this world one time, he never had to return to do any fixing for anything. This is how super spectacular a tzaddik he was. So if it appears to us that David HaMelech did any type of sin, you should know that it's on a very, very high level, and it's something that we don't understand. The fact is that he was a super, super tzaddik emet. However, the Gemara says that there were certain things that came out of this act of taking Batsheva. The fact is she was not a married woman at the time, because at that time when the Jewish soldiers used to go out to war, each one was required to give his wife a divorce beforehand, so that if he didn't return from battle, his wife was considered as divorced, Me'ikara, from the beginning, from before he went out to war. So Batsheva was not a married woman. And as to the fact that he murdered her husband Uriah, he did it rightfully, because Uriah acted disrespectfully to King David. He disobeyed a command of King David. Plus, he referred to King David as being, he referred to Yoav, the general, in a very high, eloquent way in front of King David, which was a disrespectful thing again. So he was a moted b'malchut, where the penalty is death. And the Gemara says, another question that you might ask is the fact that even if Uriah did deserve a death penalty, still, death penalty, trial, a judge, a trial. This was not a case where you just kill someone in a second. He does a sin, you kill him. If a Jew commits a sin against the king, he must be tried in a court. We must see, was he warned properly and everything, and then he's put to death. David HaMelech, in a sense, acted in haste that he just had this person put to death without asking the Sanhedrin, without asking anything. These are the three outstanding items that the Gemara points out. The fact that King David, a fourth item, the Gemara says that King David at that time should not, the fact that he was sleeping at a time when he shouldn't have been or in a way that he shouldn't have been, that's also what led him. He was walking around at night and he was able to see this woman, Bathsheba, at a time when he shouldn't have seen her. That also was part of what led him into this act, into this problem. So the Shepetovka said, now we could understand the interpretation of the Gemara. What were the items that David HaMelech seemingly committed a sin in? Number one, he was sleeping when he shouldn't have been, or he was up when he shouldn't have been awake. He messed up the time for sleeping versus the time for being awake. The second item was that he put somebody, that he separated a husband from his wife. The fact that he caused this separation between Uriah, the law is that when a man returns from a journey, that night he's required to be with his wife. That's one of the mitzvot that he's required to perform in being together with his wife when he returns from a trip, from having been away for a period of time. King David commanded Uriah on the night that he returned from war to stay away from his home, to sleep right outside the palace, not to go home to his wife. So he separated a husband from his wife. And the third thing, the fact that he didn't ask the Sanhedrin their opinion before putting this person to death. The Shepetovka said that this is what the Gemara in Berachot is explaining. When David HaMelech said to Hashem, Shamra nafshi ki chassid ani, Hashem, protect me because I am chassid, David HaMelech was going to show Hashem how the word chassid means that I have already fixed anything that I might have done wrong. I fixed it completely. What does the Gemara say I might have done wrong? I might have been sleeping when I shouldn't have been, or I might have been awake when I should have been sleeping. Hashem, look at me now. Every single night I wake up for Chatzot, a time when all the other kings are busy sleeping and enjoying themselves. I wake up, and in this manner he was rectifying the crime of changing his mishkav. His mishkav was the way it shouldn't have been. Secondly, what crime did I commit? I separated a husband from his wife. This is why my teshubah for this is that my whole work is involved in bringing together husband and wife, in checking out these questions and being very knowledgeable in the laws of nidah, these questions of bidikot, being able to be matir an isha labala, being able to show when a woman is permitted to be with her husband. The third crime, the fact that I might have acted in haste in putting this person to death rather than asking the Sanhedrin, this is why David HaMelech said, I took upon myself a vow that from here on in I would never make a move in religion without asking my rabbi first. And note, he mentioned his rabbi's name, Mephibosheth, he mentioned his rabbi's name. You might have a question, if King David had such respect for his rabbi, is a student ever permitted to mention his rabbi's name? This is why the Gemara adds that you should know that this was not his rabbi's real name. His rabbi's real name was Ishbosheth. Mephibosheth was a respectful nickname that people used to call him by. This is why David HaMelech was permitted to call him by this name. So the Shepetovka said, from this Gemara we see clearly that what's the definition? What's the true definition of chassid? One who fixes whatever needs fixing. In the case of David HaMelech, the Gemara says that these were things that might have needed fixing. He used the word chassid about himself, showing that he had fixed all of these items. At this, the Noda Bihuda and his students turned white. They saw the depth of understanding that this rabbi, the Shepetovka, had in interpreting these Gemarot in a way that they had never dreamed of, looking at the Gemara in this way and understanding it in such a deep way. They were just flabbergasted. They didn't know what, they had nothing to say whatsoever. Again, now, the Noda Bihuda asked the Shepetovka, could you tell me again, I'm asking you one last time, tell me what you're here for. What do you want? Tell me exactly what you want from me. The Shepetovka said, now I offer you a real challenge. I dare you to to ask me any question, any chapter in the entire Shas, any discussion in the entire 60 Gemarot, you could ask me in 1 second, pick a page, and I'll give you a whole lecture for a few hours on that subject. Now, those who are familiar with the manner of learning in the yeshivot, in the Litvish yeshivot especially, a rabbi never gives a shiur off the cuff. The types of shiurim they give, the rabbi usually has to prepare it very well to investigate the rishonim, the achronim, the different opinions on the Gemara, and it's not the kind of thing that you do spontaneous. By them, a rabbi never gives a shiur musar or that type of shiur. It's always something that requires a lot of preparation. The fact that he mentioned this statement